Okay, welcome everyone. Let me get the frog out of my throat. Welcome to another Tuesday afternoon here in America. Tuesday evening elsewhere in the world. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel Looking Ball on Shake and Wake Radio, PSN Radio, EPGN Radio, and SoFlo Radio. Let me see here. I guess the sound levels are okay. A little bit tired and just hope it goes well today. Welcome everybody in chat. Thanks for coming in. And all the stations are listener supported, so please donate if you're able to. Going to continue on reading the Sexual Sabotage book. How One Mad Scientist Unleashed a Plague of Corruption and Contagion on America by Dr. Judith Reisman. In case anybody hadn't heard, I did have her on the show twice. Had her on the show, I think, about 2014. And then I contacted her again. Maybe it was even 2013, somewhere in there. But then I contacted her again and got her back on in 2019. And she died about a year and a half ago. She wasn't a spring chicken anymore, but I don't really know what she died of, but I know she was up into her middle to upper 80s, so it could have been something. I think I will go back one paragraph to revisit. It's been 2 weeks, actually, since we was into the book. I had the Poopmeister on last week, if everybody remembers. Toxic Fallout. Regurgitating Kinsey's fraud as scientific gospel, most scientists swallowed it whole. Some, though, did not. Abraham Maslow, M.D., Lionel Trilling, Ph.D., and a score of others wrote about Kinsey's bad data. But even they could not have foreseen that Kinsey's cult would open the doors to the sex as a field of science, or establish sexual anarchy as the norm. Kinsey's fake statistics about parents were emotional poison that damaged subsequent generations to the present day. Kinsey seduced the greatest generation's children, the baby boomers, who became the sex, drugs, and rock and roll kids of the late 60s, and parented the Gen Xers of the 1980s, who parented today's porn generation. It was exactly what Kinsey intended, but its virulence has likely surpassed even his expectations. Armed with legitimate-looking statistics, Kinsey hypocritically alleged hypocrisy. He said our World War II heroes were adulterers and hypocrites, for whom moral integrity was a pretense. Constantly repeated, Kinsey's fraud eroded the trust that children had for their parents and spouses had for each other, as the delicate connection between Judeo-Christian morality and intimacy came unglued. Insecurity crept into relationships, undermining marriage and eroding familial bonds. From there, Kinsey argued that the greatest generation was so wildly immoral that we needed to reconsider our legal and social restrictions. He even got the laws that protected women and children from sexual assault. In the end, he and his co-conspirators sabotaged the way of life for which our honorable men and women had fought in great numbers, died. In 1948, novelist Kathleen Norris warned in Life magazine about Kinsey's philosophy. It can recede, I suppose, the civilization of ours if, in losing faith, we lost all the rest, and the eternal animal in us, the flesh that looks like, that looks only to flesh, will win the day. And so it has. We have paid dearly for Kinsey's sexual pathologies. As Kinsey's conclusions spread from mass media outlets to college textbooks, and then to high school, middle school, and even elementary school lecturers and texts, America's great strengths, our sexual reticence and commitment to God and family, would be branded as weakness, moral hypocrisy. In the end, Kinsey's black propaganda led to a drastic deterioration of American morals, changing Western society forever. The British medical journal, The Lancet, quoting Cole Porter's song about the sexual conduct of the World War II generation, according to Kinsey's report, concluded that Kinsey, an otherwise harmless student of the gall wasp, has left his former co-workers some explaining to do. The books launched the so-called sexual revolution, an era of sexual license that brought a booming global trade in electronic pornography, annual international sex trafficking of up to 800,000 women and children, domestic sex trafficking, prostitution, stripping, in the millions, unprecedented sexual violence against women and children, rampant eroticism in pop culture, high rates of unwed pregnancies, abortion on demand, skyrocketing rates of addiction to sex, pornography, and illicit drugs, failed marriages, widespread impotence, lost careers, financial ruin, sexually transmitted disease, and death. Some revolution. For years, people have charged that I track Kinsey and his followers the way the Nazi hunter tracks World War II war criminals, as if they were traitors, responsible for the deaths of untold millions of their countrymen. After all, they note, Kinsey and most of his original team are dead. Yes, I still track the Kinsey cult for their lobby were and are traitors to the greatest generation, our World War II warriors. Further, the Kinsey lobby's aggressive marketing of sexual license has unleashed a rampant child sex abuse, abortions, venereal diseases, AIDS, and serial killings. They are responsible for the deaths of untold millions of their countrymen, and their toxins have spread worldwide. In 1998, contrary to the Encyclopedia Britannica, Joseph Epstein notes that Kinsey's message, fornicate early, fornicate often, fornicate in every possible way, became the mantra of a sex-ridden age, our age, now desperate for a reformation of its own. In connecting the dots of his historical epic, the dark data speak for themselves. The evidence shows that Alfred Kinsey and his psychopathic collaborators were the most effective fifth column in the American history. The famed sociologist Peterim Sorokin, PhD, said the evidence also shows that Kinsey and his followers' diabolical sexualization of American culture drastically and brutally affected the lives of millions. What used to be considered morally reprehensive is now recommended as a positive value. What was once called demoralization is now styled as moral progress. and a new freedom. The evidence shows that Kinsey succeeded. Sorokin also notes, by vilifying the entire World War II generation, it is time we unite to restore honor to those whom Kinsey and his villainous co-conspirators defamed. Chapter 5, Normalizing Sexual Pathology, Culture and Laws, after Kinsey. Kinsey's work likened to the H-bomb when it was published and the source of innumerable citations, references, comments, and even jokes and songs, has formed the bedrock of all subsequent academic studies on human sexuality. It would be almost impossible to find an English language book on human sexuality published since the 1950s, which didn't mention Kinsey. No other academic in the field of sexology, and previous few academics in any field, have been featured on the front cover of Time magazine, or have sold so many copies of an academic textbook. Sarah Good, Pedophiles in Society, 2010. In her new British textbook, Pedophiles in Society, Professor Sarah Good, PhD, documents Kinsey's work as continued and developed by other researchers and writers. In her extensive research on the growth of pedophilia, Dr. Good documented Kinsey's child sexuality views from birth have been taken up to with gusto in certain quarters. Good, a liberal researcher, notes that his studies have shaped legislation, the gay rights movement, and the field of sex education. In fact, says the psychologist, Kinsey's has been the most important and influential work on human sexuality in the 20th century. Deeply influenced science, the media, the law, and public opinion. Another Britisher, not even sure that's a word. John Bancroft, MD, was the fourth director of the Kinsey Institute. Handpicked, like all the other institutes, other directors, he continued to perpetuate the myth of Kinsey as a objective scientist for whom a serendipitous twist of the fate led him to study sex. Yet in his introduction to the 1998 edition of the Female volume, Bancroft stated that Kinsey sought a greater understanding of the varieties of sexual expression and a resulting greater tolerance of such variability. In more than a half century since publication of the Kinsey reports, the world's scientists, judges, educators, and parenting experts have transformed a man's psychosexual perversions into a scientific premise, a belief which translated into behavior, ultimately sacrosanct as our laws and courts, classrooms, and doctors' offices. Now we are living with the fallout of Kinsey sadism and depravity. Kinsey and his co-conspirators ambushed and vanquished three bedrock American values: the authority of Judeo-Christian sexual morals, the sanctity of marriage, and the protection and the protected innocence of children. Interrelated, these three values formed the basis of civilized society. Inverting them, though, values free education, sexual license, and child exploitation leads inevitably to societal chaos and collapse. Genzi and his zealots knew this. I propose that this lobby deliberately set out to cause America to implode. His disciples, devious, call for participation in and toleration of sexual variability, has given America 6 decades of sexual pathology, spreading daily in virulence and violence. It is impossible to overstate the changes in American culture and society produced by Alfred Kinsey's attack on the morality of the greatest generation. The doggedly libertarian salons, Scott McLean, agreed with the National Research Council that America can be divided into pre-Kinsey and post-Kinsey eras. He said that the history of sex in America falls into two large, unequal, yet clearly defined periods. The first era belonged to the Puritans, the Victorians, and the related figures of restraint and misery. This epic of libidinal prohibition lasted until January 4th, 1948, whereupon, as the expression has it, the earth moved with Kinsey's first book. Before publication of Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, we were largely a family-oriented, normal-minded, church-going, God-centered nation. We were not perfect. Racism, sexism, and bigotry are ever-present human failings. Yet our country was increasingly given to respectful tolerance and equal rights for women and for all races and religions. Secular and even atheist. Due to our overall national mores, people worldwide flocked to our shores to partake in the nation's safety and opportunities. However, since Kinsey's publication, we became a country awash in divorce, pornography, sex addiction, venereal diseases, drug addiction, runaways, and sex crimes by and against adults and children. We have become a society that aborts tens of millions of babies, a society that repeatedly releases child rapists on parole, a society that inures us to increasing rates of sex crimes, of increasing savagery. As it turns out to be of significant public policy importance that instead of being a normal family man, the father of a sexual revolution was a mad sexual psychopath. While Kinsey claimed that the sexual conflicts of youth result from prudish aversion to youthful participation in normal sexual activities, we know that the world view that routinely involve young people in erotic experiments would sever the psychopathic Kinsey well. Would serve the psychopathic Kinsey well. And though he asserted that individuals and society suffer when we do not train our children in sexual techniques, Kinsey's sexual pathology devastated our public policies and national health, and the well-being and safety of our women and children. Despite the fact that this saboteur said laws cannot enforce morality, that is exactly what laws do, and that is what laws must do. Kinsey claimed that science proved there is no moral or immoral, no right or wrong, no normal or abnormal. Therefore, morality is whatever one chooses. Murderers could argue that murder should be legal. Rapists could claim that rape should be legal. Thieves can argue that theft should be legal. Following this ridiculous logic, the American Law Institute secretly fought the founders' morality, working to establish their own value-free morality. In laws that served villains, pedophiles, and other deviants. A legal paradigm shift, the American Law Institute's model penal code. Kinsey's sexual propaganda dominated the now famous or infamous sex offenses section of the American Law Institute's model penal code. ALIMPC of 1955. The powerful Kinsey and ACLU lawyers, Morris Ernst, and the renowned historian author David Loth, enthused that the Kinsey Report did for sex what Columbus did for geography. However, like Columbus, the ALIMPC authors, with Kinsey's aid, had mapped out well in advance how and where to use his scientific fraud in courts of law. That's awful nice. The first version of the ALIMPC was distributed for two legislators worldwide. Nationwide. It stressed the authority of the social sciences to legalize all consensual fornication. The Random House Dictionary defines fornication as vocabulary sexual intercourse. Voluntary sexual intercourse between two unmarried persons or two persons not married to each other. One of the many problems was that consensual fornication would be costly to society in many unseen ways, the obvious ways being the increased tax burden due to sexually transmitted diseases and illegitimate births, as well as the general destabilization of the family. As fornication became common and consent became expected, subjecting women and children to additional unparticipated physical and social pressures and consequences. This loosening of moral absolutes certainly has caused and continues to cause many subtle changes in the human landscape. Before Kinsey, American laws protected women from what our hard-nosed Judeo-Christian patriarchy recognized as a predatory streak in their fellow men. However, if roughly half of women and men were fornicating with no bad public health consequences, as Kinsey claimed, these carefully designed special privileges for women and were obviously unnecessary. So in 1955, Kinsey's sex frauds were carved into the American Law Institute's model penal code. Sex science now participated fully in the protection of predators to the injury of their victims. Perhaps more than anything else, the ALIMPC exemplifies the fact that Kinsey's defamation of the greatest generation had profounded fallout in all aspects of our moral and sexual life and in law. Indeed, his propaganda affected the very essence of our society, spawning epidemics that threatened our children, our families, our marriages, our public safety, our quality of life, our very lives. All of these changes have been and will continue to steamroll through our society, starting with Alfred C. Kinsey. The Kinsey Lobby continues to perpetrate the Kinsey Institute's agenda in all areas of human sexuality in our culture. This is Kinsey's legacy. The mainstream Boston media didn't give Slutcracker negative reviews, although they did suggest it was for adults only. One review mentions that Clara finds a sex toy under the Christmas tree when, says the Boston Phoenix, we are treated to a retelling of the Nutcracker. Larger than life, candy stripe, dildos, and pole dancing sugar plum fairies. Slutcracker review, November 30th, 2009. And I think that's a good place for a break right there. let me see here. Boy. I guess about 3.5 minutes. Just a quick break. We'll be right back, everyone.
Talk with Jesus.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. Slick Cracker. I guess that's the name of a book. I don't know. Doesn't seem like anything I want to read. Our laws are no longer based on Judeo-Christian morality, but on Kinsey's immoral morality and adulterous, fornicating, aborting, pornographic addicted, masturbating, impotent, sadistic, masochistic, bisexual, homosexual, exhibitionist, voyeuristic, and child sexual abusive world. These truths are difficult to accept, yet crucial. America must come to understand what has gone wrong and how we changed from a family-oriented and flawed but honorable country to a sex-obsessed and violent one. In the ethic issues in sex therapy, pop sexologist Masters, Johnson, Kolodny, and Weems presented papers on the history of ethics of sex. Research involved children and the mentally retarded. Masters, Johnson, Kolodny, and their world-famous sexperts expressed no ethics problem when they reported that Kinsey teams criminal sexual abuse in 1,888 infants and children. No ethics violation. No problem. None whatsoever. Although ethics committees constantly testified on the make decisions about embryonic cloning, partial birth abortion, compulsory sex disease, vaccinations for infants, assisted suicide, you name it. No national ethics organization has ever seen fit to investigate the Kinsey Institute's crimes. Despite my efforts for 35 years, this is hardly reassuring. Over the years, I have contracted many ethics groups about the criminal abuse of children evident in Kinsey's data. I contacted the Hastings Center in New York. I contacted the Ethics Division of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I reached out to scores of writers concerned with ethics, but no one wanted to know about these crimes, and none of America's ethics royalty has bothered to condemn that Kinsey abuse as of his of this writing. None. I have often felt that John Adams in the Broadway play 1776 is anyone there? Adams cried out from his heart during the debate about declaring independence. Does anyone care? Does anyone see what I see? My earlier book, Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences, identifies the racist policies of the Kinsey Institute and the Kinsey's studies. I documented Kinsey's claim that these experimental babies and children were taken from the black community, the ghetto. Still, there is no outrage from the academe or law. Federal, state, and private grants generously continue to fund research in sex, gender, and reproduction at the Kinsey Institute. Naturally, these funds pay for these sexperts use in commercial pornography and production of their own. Why? Because today's sexologists are commonly addicted to pornography, imbibing it themselves so they can use it for therapy. This should not surprise us. Their founder, addicted as well, also made his own, as Masters and Johnson said. They all stand on Kinsey's shoulders. Chapter 6, Marriage, Family, and Parenting. People will be involved in the attic with all kinds of sexual acts. And she'll come out with milk and cookies and towels for them to, you know, dry off and freshen up. And then milk and cookies and the next year, the next round of, you know, behavior will begin. James Jones, Sexual Science in America's Bedroom. Alfred Kinsey, Measures Sexual Behavior. Kinsey biographer James Jones paints a wholesome picture above of the famous man's dutiful wife and helpmate, Clara Kinsey. Despite Jones's sanitized depiction of the, you know, behavior, Clara Kinsey was accustomed to being degraded right from her honeymoon, when she became the first permanent member of the sex guru's harem. From that day, Clara Kinsey no doubt bore the brunt of her husband's perverse wrath. And more, if she did not bow to his will, its standard Pavlovian conditioning mode, she jumped at the sound of the bell. And having sexually degraded herself, she degraded others, certainly allowing the abuse of Kinsey's experimental child subjects. Novelist T.C. Boyle was the only person in the American Experience television documentary who voiced an honest observation of the Kinsey's relationship, wondering about Clara's jealousy, loneliness, and any emotional harm. Pursuing the issue, Boyle coyly muses whether love and romance can be totally separate from the mechanical act of sex, the hormonal act of sex, as Kinsey would suggest. Of course, Kinsey married Clara largely on the cover for his homosexuality, and when he promised to love, honor, and cherish her, he lied. So what about love? Clara's wifely duties. Despite the Kinsey daughter's claim that mom and dad were typical conservative parents, she couldn't have missed the atypical fact that their parents had separate bedrooms on separate floors of their home. Having given her the masculine nickname of Mac, Kinsey replaced his bride with an endless parade of male lovers and quickie pickups. Kinsey did not just break his marriage vows, he trampled them into the mud, abandoning his wife's bed for seedy sodomy in bars, hotels, bathhouses with multiple male subjects. Jones reported this account of the household arrangements by the sadomasochistic Earl Marsh, a.k.a. Mr. Y. During his visits to Bloomington, Mr. Y always stayed at the Kinseys. Kinsey's relationship with Clara was no longer passionate. They slept in different bedrooms. I don't think he had sex with Mac to have sex, but if I was there, we'd all have sex. Elaborating, Mr. Y reveals to Jones, Kinsey and I'd be having sex upstairs, and I'd go downstairs and have sex with Mac in the same house. She accepted what went on. You know, not that Clara had much choice, not if she wished to remain with her husband. Kinsey once said, the reason she does, accepting everything, is that she knows that when I make up my mind to do something, I do it. Recalling Mr. Y. Marsh said Kinsey had a male harem and Clara had better be open as hell. She often had sex with a man directly after Kinsey had used him. How mannerly. Divorce was unthinkable. She could only accept his table scraps. Clara would never have gone to court and divulged the real grounds of the divorce. Jones admitted that. No one felt the force of his underlying demands more strongly than Clara, who went along with the filming, doing her best to throw herself into the role with the proper abandon as befitting the wife of the High Priestess, the High Priest of Sexual Liberation. Clara was filming masturbating, and she was also filmed having sex with Pomeroy. She was cooperative, anything he wanted. I did see films of Kinsey masturbating, Jones acknowledged in his Yorkshire television documentary. I saw films of Mrs. Kinsey masturbating. If Kinsey coerced his wife into doing that on camera, he could only imagine what the rest of her life was like. Martin Dellenbeck told Jones that Clara did what Kinsey wanted because she didn't have anything else. Clara was, in many ways, a victim of her times. Since Americans are truly traditional and deeply committed to marital fidelity, how could she face the public shame of her life? All the accuses about her worship of Kinsey's vision rang false. Any acknowledge of human love makes it clear that these activities were highly destructive to her, the other performers, to the marriages, and therefore to their children. We know that Kinsey bullied women and that he bullied them into making sex films. Clara was a party to this coercion. The novelist T.C. Boyle wondered whether the wives of Kinsey's teams might have suffered emotionally, as the emotional traumas of living such lives escaped all the Kinsey biographers. So too did the fact that some of those wives might also have suffered physical harm, say from the venereal diseases they might be contracted from bisexual experimenting husbands. Hidden behind a falsified and idolized marriage model that the father of sexology held, up to fool the world, the true Kinsey marriage was rife with sadistic masturbatory satisfactions and by homosexual adultery. Yes, the father of American sex education, of therapy, and the sexual liberation cult shaped millions of marriages in his deformed image, specializing in primitive, painful, pathologic, and ultimately pathetic sex acts that humiliated and assaulted everyone involved. Kinsey himself never lived in a healthy marriage. Whatsoever it was never love by any stretch of the word. Kinsey's perverted marriage model. In Kinsey's research, as well as in his own marriage and sexual relationship, one thing was missing, the most important thing. Kinsey was incapable of researching or understanding or likely even contemplating or feeling love. Kinsey was psychologically and intellectually unable to support or even understand what keeps marriages intact. A good marriage is woven throughout with fidelity and love, both quite foreign to him. Kinsey utterly neglected the structure and physiology of the emotional and spiritual side of human sexual life. Former Kinsey Institute librarian Cornelia Christensen, in Kinsey, a biography, recalled a 1935 lecture that Kinsey gave on sexuality and reproductive behavior. Throughout the talk, allegedly predated Kinsey's academic interest in sex by 3 years. Christensen noted Kinsey's interest in and concern for the problems arising from the social restrictions on man's biological nature. She quoted his conclusions. The ignorance of sexual structure and physiology of the technique, fundamental of the normal course of sexual activities, and the prudish aversions to adequate participation in sex results in broken marriages. Kinsey determined that this ignorance of sexual structure and physiology, the mechanical aspects of sex, caused marriages to fail. Since he had practiced a distorted form of sex on himself since he was a young boy, torturing his own sexual structure and physiology for more than 3 decades, he should have had a blissful marriage. By his thinking, to keep marriages intact, society should lift restrictions that limit sexual behavior. Early in life, we should learn how to masturbate, copulate, and sodomize, he informed us, because ignorance would limit orgasms and lead to divorce. Comparing the post-Kinsey American divorce rate against the enduring marriages of the greatest generation reveals these claims are as ludicrous. Indeed, science confirms common sense. Grandmothers and biblical readings that physical ignorance seldom causes marital failure. Although sometimes a major problem, ignorance also has unified many virginal newlyweds embarking the great mystery and adventure of the marital act. Yeah, what a guy. What a peach. But Kinsey took aim and fired directly into the heart of America's social vision. Marriage, blaming everything from high rates of divorce and rape to homosexuality and sexual repression. He certainly knew that sexual promiscuity would inevitably lead to more divorce. The failed marriages, rape, and homosexuality, which it did. Thus, the father of the sexual revolution was also the father of the no-fault divorce. Sexual addictions, incontinence, early satisfaction of the sexual impulses, and so much more. Marriage in the Greatest Generation. While Kinsey was busy sabotaging Americans with false claims of our sexual behavior, Hitler conquered Denmark, Holland, and Norway. France fell, and England was destined to go next. But Italy followed the former teacher and dictator, Benito Mussolini. The United States rescued the Western world with our World War II efforts turned wholly upon our soldiers, faith in God, their love of the country, their love for their wives and families, and their selfless solidarity with their comrades in arms. Today, Europe is free only because the morals and values of the greatest generation strengthened our men and maintained their commitment to fight and die. If we need be, to preserve freedom for America and for victims of tyranny abroad. Were it not for G.I. Joe's individual morality and honor, the Nazi jackboot would have squashed all of Europe. But after the war, Europeans quickly forgot this. In the years since, European and United Kingdom elitists often called Americans uptight, sexually repressed Puritans. This view widely missed the mark. In fact, honest research confirms that the pre-Kinsey America, love was in the air. Americans believed in sex, but held that good sex depended on love and marriage. In fact, most Americans planned to make a honeymoon gift
to each other for their virginity. It was the American way. Even by the 1960, most college males still believed that sex without love seemed utterly unethical. Interviewing 200 college men, Kinsey's libertarian psychologist friends, Phyllis and Eberhard Kronhauser, were surprised and appalled to discover that the average modern college man is apt to say that he considers intercourse too precious to have anyone except the girl he expects to marry, and may actually abstain from all intercourse for that reason. The brilliant and touching letters between Abigail and John Adams, obviously virgins before their wedding, provides insight into the reality of pre-Kinsey American marriage. Alas, Abigail wrote in December of 1773, "How many snowbanks divide thee and me, dearest friend?" The only single expression, she said, dwelt upon my mind and played about my heart. Later she begged, "Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands." And John wrote to her, "This is rather too coarse a compliment, but you are so saucy, I won't even blot it out." To give children a real historical baseline from learning about marriage and eros, sex education should focus on love letters between husbands and wives who together face challenges like hardship and war. Boys and girls would then understand the purity before the wedding day and fidelity afterward, rather than impediments to love, passion, and successful marriages are commonly aids to it. Unfortunately, the fallout from Kinsey's domestic black propaganda is apparent today as American culture and marriage took a sharp turn. Kinsey's marriage fraud. From stories such as King David and Bathsheba, Sir Lancelot and Queen Guinevere, and recorded histories such as Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, we know that throughout time, fornication and adultery have imperiled human peace and prosperity. Few men willingly rear other men's offspring. What's more, women who were known to be unchastened rarely would ascend to the throne to keep it. Unchastened women of lower caste had difficulty marrying. And by the time of the greatest generation, even men who themselves had sowed their own wild oats sought to marry chaste women. Was this double standard unfair to women? Of course it was. On the other hand, the stress of the unchastity actually provided a healthier and more civilized world for women and for children and for their children. Despite Kinsey's lies, American men were expected to be chaste to save themselves for their beloved. But following Kinsey's mail book in 1948, the focus on chastity and therefore fidelity in marriage was reversed, razzing the bourgeois, or however that word is said, bourgeois notion of heterosexual marriage and family. Kinsey fathered a sexual revolution that triggered a steady slide, a moral free-for-all from Indiana University to college professors to fraternity houses to bedrooms, and from sex, drugs, and rock and roll to Woodstock, to music and the arts, and even a big pornography inevitably profited big pharmacology and big businesses' boardrooms. Before Kinsey, our boys, I think I'll wait until after this, take a break here to start this next section. Let's see. I think I guess about 6 minutes here, everyone. So yeah, maybe a little bit more, about 7 minutes. Be right back. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Oh, lead me to that rock. Yes, Lord, lead me to that rock. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Well, it now has been a shelter for me. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Oh, lead me to that rock. Yes, Lord, lead me to that rock. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Now has been a shelter for me. Well, you go down to yonder fold to search among the sheep. He loves to keep my brother. Thou hast been a shelter for me. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Oh, lead me to that rock. Yes, Lord, lead me to that rock. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Thou hast been a shelter for me. You go down to the wilderness. Thank you.
Oh, little boy, don't be afraid, because you've got a brand new daddy now.
Thanks to Calvary.
Okay, I need to take another song break here because I just had a call from somebody and I'm going to call him back. Give me a quick 3 minutes here.
Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I? Oh, lead me to that rock. Yes, Lord, lead me to that rock. Why don't you lead me to that rock that is higher than I?
Okay, thought that was going to be Roger, but it wasn't. Somebody else. I'll have to call him back after I'm done. He called when I had about 10 seconds left to go back on the microphone. Before Kinsey, our boys went off to war, leaving for the duration. Unless they were killed or severely wounded, they would not be home until the war ended. Soldiers did not get stateside R&R or special leave for the holidays. Together with the emotional devastation of the war, the long separations wrought changes in sons and husbands, who left as boys and returned as men. Having cheated death, they tried to get past the trauma of the war. Our veterans cherished life. Creating families and children was the driving force. So they married immediately and started large families. Births jumped to the highest in our nation's history. 1940, 2,360,399. 1946, 3,470,000. 1947, 3,910,000. That's a big boom, that's for sure. The 2009 U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report changing patterns of non-marital childbearing in the United States revealed, with abortion and contraception freely available. In 2007, 60% of births to women aged 20 to 24 were non-marital, up to 52% in 2002. 32.2% of births to women 25 to 29 were non-marital, up from one quarter, 25% in 2002, with births to unmarried women totaling 1.7 million, 26% more than in 2002.
pre-Kinsey notions of illegitimacy and bastardy tended to limit unmarried births despite restrictions on contraception and of criminalization of abortion. Although AIDS to dependent children was created in 1936, in 1940 virtually no illegitimate children and few non-whites were on its rolls. However, illegitimacy, in fact, was at 7.8% in 1940. By 1950, the youngsters under 15 were the largest single population group in the country, with roughly 12% of those youngsters recorded as illegitimate. Between 1940 and 1947, the baby boom increased the population by 12 million. Then in 1948, Kinsey's bow-tied, crew-cut visage was in every magazine and newspaper. He spoke on the radio and appeared on new television sets that showed up in even modest homes all across the country. I remember hearing something about him proving that all adults were licentious sexual hypocrites. Thanks to the massive Rockefeller-funded publicity campaign for the Kinsey reports, I was not alone. Across America, the effects on Kinsey's propaganda on our World War II men and women, and subsequently on their children, wildly skewed our perceptions of each other. The boring, faithful Americans and the Greatest Generation naturally wondered who among their family, friends, and neighbors and fellow churchgoers were living this exciting, dissolute life like Kinsey described. Emily Mudd, a famous marriage counselor and Kinsey aficionado, reflected on the kinds of cartoons, jokes, remarks, and queries that spread like a flash flood across the country. Anyone who hears these reports talks with their friends about them and sees them in different popular magazines can't help but wonder where they as an individual fit into this or that pattern. We wonder about our friends and our associates. Some loyal spouses who had never thought of straying now doubted each other. And if adultery was so common and harmless, deception so easy, and jealousy so passé, maybe they too should taste the exciting, forbidden fruit before they grew too old. Further insecurity, demoralization, and pondering stirred among the Greatest Generation, prodded by bogus, misguided mental health experts. That is the nature and purpose of black propaganda. Not only did men and women begin wondering which of Kinsey's statistics fit their own spouses, but their children, for the first time, began silently questioning their parents' morality, hating to think about their parents' sexual lives, and afraid of the possible answers. Too many young people simply didn't ask, but their moms and dads' denials would not have mattered much anyways, since college. Professors and textbooks explained that their parents were so sexually repressed that they naturally lied to hide the shocking truth from their children. The Greatest Generation was branded a generation of hypocrites, living a lie of sexual licentiousness by night and hiding behind a veneer of upstanding citizenship by day. Having assaulted the men of the generation
In 1948, Kinsey and his co-saboteurs unleashed sexual behavior in the human female in 1953, assaulting the chastity of American women. That same year, the sex industry moved in as Hugh Hefner made his move in December of 1953 with his first publication of Playboy, soon an icon on college campuses. Branding American's women as morally loose, Kinsey's hostile scientism caused millions to wonder about their mothers, their sisters, and their girlfriends. Husbands wondered too. Of course, no one could know that wives and mothers in Kinsey's study were mainly prostitutes, whom Kinsey paid to be coded as typical American women. This was no accident. Normal women wouldn't answer his sexual questions, and Kinsey eagerly sought abnormal people upon whom to norm his false data. He had sown the seeds of distrust with his classic black propaganda. Kinsey undermined the trust and commitment of Americans to each other and to the founders' ideal of a virtuous, civilized people. It would wreak havoc. Monumental effect. America was the healthiest and wealthiest nation on earth into the 1950s, with fewer educated elites and city folk. The Judeo-Christian ethic was the essence of our nation, per persona, a great nation of laws under God. A nation strove to uphold our pledge of allegiance to our national anthem, believing in the morality that our parents taught us. We upheld the values of courage, faith, honesty, responsibility, self-control, virginity, honor, loyalty, and love of family and country. Post-war, the greatest generation as parents taught their children that God always watched them, that all persons were equal in the image of God, that therefore homosexuality, pitiable but abnormal, was largely due to early neglect or sexual abuse, that it was wrong to dress provocatively or view risque pictures, that they should refrain from premarital sex, that they should stay faithful, and that they should abstain brutal violence or alcoholism, and that they should absent brutal violence or alcoholism. They should try to stay married, if only for the security that it provided for the children. While such moral structures did have drawbacks, these values became meaningless if children believed that their parents commonly or hypocritically betrayed these values. Returning from the war, our dazed... I got a quick story. I don't know if I told this or not, but there's a guy I've known for close to 40 years. Him and his first wife, they had just one son, only child. They had fell out of love at some time in their marriage, but they stayed together. And the boy was 14 years old, and he confronted both of them. He said, I know the two of you don't love each other anymore. You don't have to stay together for me. And they divorced. He was 14, and he was okay with it. So that's the, that was, over 20 years ago. Returning from the war, our dazed fighters couldn't see what was about to punch them in the gut. Everywhere they turned, they heard they were sexual charlatans. It was wrong, insane. Yet, how many World War II survivors spent their last years pondering what they had done to create our immoral culture? In her book, daily life in the United States, 1940 to 1959, shifting worlds historian. Eugenia Kaledin writes, no greater revolution took place during the 1950s than the shift in attitudes towards sex. By the end of the decade, all institutional control over individual sexual behavior seemed to melt away. Beginning with the two gigantic Kinsey reports, the nation's mores were turned upside down. On the heels of the Mail volume in 1948, three major companion books would work to sabotage American law. The first out of the gate was The Ethics of Sexual Acts in Kinsey's Friend, René Guyon, a closet French pedophile jurist. The second was American Sexual Behavior and the Kinsey Report by author historian David Loth and Kinsey's lawyer Morris Ernst, the ACLU attorney. The third book was Sex Habits of American Men, a collection of essays edited by journalist Albert Deutsch and written by world-famous, stunningly foolish Acadian. What? Oh. Academicians. The drumbeat continued nationwide. Thousands of articles and essays appeared by lawyers, judges, academics, anthropologists, psychiatrists, sociologists. Kinsey's cabal was on the move. Influential authors quoted Kinsey's bogus findings as fact, ridiculing all American sex laws and calling for a reduction in an elimination of all sex crimes penalties. By 1953, the unrelenting buzz instigated the Illinois General Assembly's Commission on Sex Offenders. The Kinsey Report permeated all present thinking on this subject. Concepts of sexual normality and abnormality have little, if any, biological justification. Crime prevention, though, sex education for both adults and children, may prove to be effective. A cultural tendency to overprotect women and children from is more detrimental to the victim than the offense itself, really. Little did Americans know that the bell was tolling to end all such Judeo-Christian tendencies to overprotect women and children. Until this turning point in our history, half of our states outlawed a single act of unmarried consensual intercourse. Of course, few lovers' lanes couples were dragged off to the lockup, but the law held out a clear ideal that had the direct effect of assuring most children of an intact family with a father and a mother and a very real opportunity for the stable and healthy life. Thus constraining committed passion had important social consequences, the same ones that had helped to produce the strong and moral nation from which the greatest generation emerged. The same morality that underpinning their ability to win World War II. Today, as our social conference, the gamut of sexual dysfunction and erosity, it is clear that to overprotect cultural tendencies have been diabolically destroyed. Meanwhile, back in 1953, the Illinois report proves that Kinsey intended his stealth design to deliver a death blow to our sex laws. Harvard sexologist Pitraman Sorokin shook his head. What used to be considered morally reprehensive is now styled moral progress and new freedom. Legal protections for women. Hang on a second here. Legal protections for women. In an angry screed in the Washington Post in 2004, law professor Jonathan Turley quoted Kinsey's adultery findings and concluded that such science proves that our laws still condemning adultery reflects fundamentalist Islamic states. Like so many liberal thinkers, Turley either needs to do some independent thinking or travel to the Middle East, for to compare American adultery laws to Islamic laws is shamefully uninformed. Pre-Kinsey American adultery laws, which the Illinois Commission said overprotecting women, and in fact shielded women as well as their children and property. Islamic fundamentalist laws, on the other hand, have always overprotected men. A Muslim man may literally have multiple wives, which we still call polygamous adultery, and he can discard any of his wives by merely saying three times that he is divorced. That he is divorcing her. Once so divorced, such a Muslim wife is legally on her own. Shamed without home, job, alimony, opportunities, or children, unless her husband grants her permission. Rare indeed is the Muslim woman who would dare to try to divorce her husband. The elevation of women, marriage, and premarital chastity in both sexes is a distinctively Western characteristic. It was the Western Judeo-Christian belief that each of us is made in God's image that opened the door to equal rights, to legal rights for both sexes. Both the Old and New Testaments abhor divorce, and knowing the men sexual vulnerability to lust warned men not to abandon the wife of their youth. Prior to the Kinsey reports, American laws were, with regard to sex, reflected the American ideal that it is critical for the civil society to honor women, wives, and mothers. To that end, the laws have governed the greatest generation favored women as the protectors of marriage and family. According to these laws, infidelity justified severe alimony payments. Courts found fault in divorce and usually awarded child custody to betrayed moms. Such restrictions were the results of long political campaigns by ladies who convinced voting gentlemen that God would only bless husbands bless husbands and an America that tried to live by the Ten Commandments. And I think I'll take the last break of the show right here, everyone. So, let me see. I guess about 6 minute break.
I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God
Okay, welcome back, everyone. Final, 23, 24 minutes, somewhere in there. Kinsey's Adultery. Oh, please, all the stations are listener supported, so please help them out if you can. Kinsey's Adultery. Kinsey's biographers pretended that his cruel betrayal of Clara and sexual prowling for handsome young bucks somehow did not poison their marriage. But infidelity crushes the heart and the soul of the victimized spouse. Usually, but not always, the wife. Traditionally, our laws clearly recognized the brutality of adultery to the betraying spouse, to the family, and to society. Yet Kinsey expected us simply to ignore the cost of infidelity. The wars fought down through the years, the countless suicides, the homicides, hundreds of years of literacy, scientific and scholarly treatises on love, jealousy and sex and betrayal, and all the other reasons for laws that stood against adultery. Instead, Kinsey set out to banish normal and abnormal, moral and immoral, sin and redemption, good and bad, love and hate. Primal human emotions are not so easily dismissed. I once knew an English woman who found her husband cheating on her. She grabbed a butcher knife and chased him all over the neighborhood, then stabbed him 10 times. Oh boy. When he limped home from the hospital, I gotta turn the page. When he limped home from the hospital, she looked up coyly and cooed, "Tea, dear? One lump or two?" One lump or two? Lumps of sugar. While I certainly do not advocate the release of such primitive emotions, as far as I know, he never cheated again. I guess it worked, Annie. Right, Mom. You're right there. Before Kinsey, adultery was both shameful and illegal. But when he claimed that a quarter of wives cheated on their husbands, and most of the rest wanted to, he debunked the notion of female virtue. Such revelations increasingly devastated men's views of their wives and, in turn, their own fidelity. Well, at least he was able to limp home. Another little story. I've known a couple for close to 40 years. I think they've been in the home just across the one street over. Known them for 40 plus years. He was a big drunkard, and he was also beating his wife whenever he got drunk. He was an abuser. She got tired of it one night and went until he fell asleep and took a frying pan to his head. He woke up in the hospital, and he quit drinking and never beat her again. So that one worked. And he jokes about it now, though, but it wasn't a joke when he was beating her and getting drunk. Yeah, that works too. Rolling pans, frying pans. I forgot where I was, so I'm going to have to go back. Instead, what if in marriage or in society, adulterers have a free pass? An incalculable cost to our society, Kinsey has succeeded in largely granting them this. Before Kinsey, adultery was both shameful and illegal. But when he claimed that a quarter of wives cheated on their husbands and most of the rest wanted to, he debunked the notion of female virtue. Such revelations increasingly devastated men's views of their wives and, in turn, their own fidelity. Since then, America has largely decriminalized adultery, no-fault divorce, which all states legalized in full or in part in 1984. Quadrupled divorce rates, alimony essentially ended, impoverishing ex-wives and their children. Wives lost homes, cars, other marital assets, and spousal support, which, until then, had been automatically awarded to betrayed spouses. Few protections remain for wives except in community property states. Mothers of small children were forced to go to work. Subsequently, many women chose to maintain jobs after marriage, just in case, and this removed other mothers from their role as the primary caretakers on now latchkey children. Legalizing adultery was the job of Kinsey's black propaganda, and in time, the job of the education arm of the American Bar Association, the American Law Institute Model Penal Code, ALI-MPC. The ALI-MPC wanted to decriminalize adultery, opening the door to open marriage, wife swapping, swinging, and no-fault divorce. But according to the minutes of an ALI-MPC committee debut, an anonymous Nebraska lawyer was outraged by the proposal to decriminalize adultery. "I came from the section of the country," he told his elitist community members, "where we still try to preserve the home and sanctity of the marriage. Kinsey's morality, however, won the day and eventually the land." According to historian David Allen, another Kinsey aficionado, the committee voted to eliminate adultery from the Model Penal Code. In fact, by the time the code was published in 1960, it closely matched Swartz and Plasko's original intentions, which were based on the logic of the Kinsey reports. Great, the ALI-MPC cited Kinsey's claim that in an appreciable number of cases, an experiment in adultery tends to confirm rather than disrupt the marriage. The committee might have asked exactly how many adulterous marriages were confirmed. What were the criteria for confirmation, and how was the data collected, by whom, over what length of time, and was the alleged findings independently validated? Had they done so, they would have realized that Kinsey and the ALI-MPC had embarked on yet another big legal lie. Considering Kinsey's torrid tumbles with the collection of desperate men and boys, Clara's perfunctory adultery experiment may have indeed confirmed their disordered marriage. Again, Kinsey justified his own deviant lifestyle and inflicted it on our nation and even on the world. By statistically defaming wives and implicitly mothers in the 1940s, Kinsey paved the way for no-fault divorce and an epidemic of single mothers. It did not matter to the ALI-MPC lawyers that Kinsey's World War II sex survey did not include service women or women who otherwise worked for the government. No matter that most of Kinsey's wives were not actually married, but were prostitutes or women who lived with a man for over a year. Claiming adultery was widely practiced and trivial, Kinsey's ALIMPC lied and liberated men from their moral responsibility to their wives and children. As a result, the cult of sexual psychopaths and their abettors to media, law, clergy, and government and education forever altered American society, American social history. No, I'm going to make a comment here. It seems to me that people back then, when he started this so-called sexual revolution or whatever, in the late 40s and early 50s, when he wrote these books, I think maybe people were looking for some sort of excuse to do the things that that they were doing. And he provided them with, false data, propaganda, whatever you want to call it. But it was ultimately their choice. It was ultimately the choice of the people of the 50s, 60s, and 70s to do the things that they've done. It's still their choice. These books didn't change their minds, I don't think. I think that they had thoughts already of doing these things. And this just gave them an out, if you understand what I mean. Maybe it's just my opinion, and their opinions are like armpits. Everybody has one, and they all stink. Well, thanks, Mom. Thanks, Annie. In time, the naive cavalcade of sexual radicals of the 1960s began to question why they needed that silly piece of paper anyways. In the wake, the breakdown of society as powerful proof of the promiscuous cause of divorce for adults and especially for children. For step-by-step, the laws have been always known to be socially stabilized. Went by the wayside. Something else too. I never went along with peer pressure. If it wasn't right, I didn't do it. I didn't care what any kid said or anyone else said. I had something my mother would always used to say when I was a kid. Well, if everybody wanted to jump off a bridge, would you want to go jump off a bridge too? Of course, that was long before the bungee jumping. And I would always say no, of course. The Honorable Judge Morris Plasko was a major author of the ALIMPC, which never questioned who comprised Kinsey's average World War II men or women, or where Kinsey got infants and children to molest. Instead of really reading Kinsey's Swiss cheese of a study, Judge Plasko opined that it is obvious that our sex crime legislation is completely out of touch with the realities of individual living. Lawyer Morris Ernst excitedly explained. The whole of our laws and customs in sexual matters is based on the avowed desire to protect the family, and at the base of the family is the father. His behavior is revealed by the Kinsey report to be quite different from anything the general public had supposed possible or reasonable. Yeah, they hadn't supposed it because it was lies. It has been rather complacently assured that a great many Americans that sexual activity for men outside the marriage bond is as rare as it is offensive to the publicly proclaimed standards of the people, strengthened by the bulk of popular literature and entertainment, and the most savage penalties which many state laws attach to such activities as adultery. Well, I'm glad everybody's in agreement. That way I won't feel bad if somebody gets mad. Within a few years, our lawyers, judges, and attorneys... Yeah. Within a few years, our lawyers, judges, attorneys general, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and indeed our entire justice system, as Ronald Reagan observed in 1981, favored predators and ignored victims. The Kinsey cult coached, disciplined, and drilled the justice system in jurisprudence, both politically and personally. Thus, only a handful of U.S. laws that once protected women and children seduction branch of promise to marry, alienation of affection, and criminal conversions still live in some books. Some linger as remnants of the pre-Kinsey era. As with this writing, 10 states, including Virginia, still have unused anti-fornication statutes that prohibit sex outside marriage. Through prosecution of marital infidelity is, though prosecution of marital infidelity is rare, Virginia and 21 other states can still indict it. In fact, in September 2004, a former Virginia town attorney confessed to adultery and got 20 hours of community service as punishment. Free sex is not free. Life's magazine cover photo on August 24, 1953 showed two little girls collecting seashells on the beach under the heading Kinsey Report on Women. A trusted magazine, Life, gave Kinsey full exposure and full credibility, publishing Kinsey's facts about widespread fornication and adultery, and saying that Kinsey's team knew more about women than any man in the world. Of course, had the public known that these scientists were actually a handpicked gang of adulterous, bi-homosexual misogynists, the article would never have appeared. Few Americans could avoid hearing and reading the adultery data from the Kinsey Rockefeller cult, although most average Americans reject the bogus findings. Academic elites were the first to accept the new science, the new sex science, until eventually the oft-repeated proof of alleged harmless and even healthy free love gained acceptance, claiming to provide scientific justification for sex, early and often, and with anyone or anything. The Kinsey fraud eventually rendered deviance as passé. In the process, vulnerable individuals followed the experts, wallowing in a wholly new configuration. Not just premarital sex, but loveless sex. College anthropologists Nina and George O'Neill, PhDs, quoted Kinsey in their 1972 book, Open Marriage. The O'Neills sold Americans on adultery as a updated type of monogamy. Through the same swinging and wife-swapping that sexually predatory fringe academicians had eagerly endorsed, according to the O'Neills. After reading the Kinsey Report, reports on sexual behavior in the human male in 48, and the sexual behavior in the human female in 53. We found everybody else was apparently already doing it. What really went on in the sexual life of America had at last been made public through rigorous scientific research, inhibitions began to look plain silly. Like Hugh Hefner, the O'Neills scorned the post-World War II ideal of togetherness in marriage, saying sexual fidelity is the false god of closed marriage. But, well, the choice is entirely up to you. The cool, smart, smiling, educated O'Neills certainly wouldn't bow before that false god. After all, they said, our GIs sowed their own wild oats with fräuleins and geishas, whether the husbands admitted it or not. Of course, the authors had not served in the war. Catch-22 author Joseph Heller did. He reported this about his bomb wigs bombardiers. Tom was only a few years older than I, no older than 25, I'm sure, but he was already married and the father of an infant child he'd seen not more than a few times. He was resolutely intent on surviving to rejoin the family he'd missed so greatly, and he was increasingly and visibly perturbed that he might not succeed. It's a joy to me now to report that he did. Hall A. Moody, my age or even younger, was also married, and I relate with pride, not scorn, that neither he nor Tom Sloan ever exhibited any slight interest in sex with other women. Certainly some men yielded to the trauma and the terror of war, returning they would want to put their infidelities behind them to rebuild their lives and families. Instead, the O'Neills said inhibitions were plain silly because everyone else was swinging, and this made marriages solid. The O'Neills even advocated that wives should prepare for multiple partners. Thou shalt commit multiple adultery, albeit responsibly. On December 31st, 2000, the New York Times included the review of the O'Neill legacy, pointing out that they had underestimated jealousy in the book as a source of trouble. When Nima interviewed the subjects years later, she found few of those with sexually open marriages had stayed married. Of the 100 or so couples Nina spoke with, the longest sexually open marriage was 2 years. Although the Pied Piper led the children of Hamelin into mythical destruction, Kinsey's black propaganda, popularized by experts like the O'Neills, led women out of marriage and married couples into adultery, divorce, and genuine destruction. In 1968, these two PhDs lectured nationwide, singing their siren song that marital freedom equals happiness. By 1974, the backlash over wife swapping, swinging, and failed open marriages caused the O'Neills to backpedal. In shifting gears, they denied that their advice had encouraged the divorce wreckage evident everywhere. Ignoring the brazen facts before them of the increased harm to children who do not live with married parents, as if on cue, the couple reported to blaming their public for the trauma that they had inflicted with their expert psychobabble, charging they were misunderstood. Of course they were. We're misunderstood. I think that's all for today, folks. My voice is getting pretty haggard. Getting pretty ragged. So, no song at the end, Andy. I'm just going to drop your streams. And say, hope to see everybody out there for tomorrow, for me and Roger. Until next time.